you know, we've been married 19 years now, and now you go to the bathroom with the door open. It's like, right? I had Brussels sprouts for dinner. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. That's
wait,
just
that
what
really
it
happened?
Is.
So wait, are you guys serious? Wait, is this true?
Yeah.
You really do? You go to the bathroom?
Like, I'm not going to take the time to close the door because I got somewhere to be. Like, it's an in and out. That we're not talking half an hour like he does.
Leave the door open.
Not anymore.
You got crap to do, literally.
Literally, mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. I got, yes. We've got to keep the train moving.
Yes.
I don't poop at my parents' house. We can talk about that on the next episode.
Good. IKR, I know, right? Is a podcast about women for women. Hosts Allie and Latasha, along with special guests, explore the hidden world and narratives going on inside the heads of everyday women. What makes them tick and how they wrestle with stuff like God, work, family, friends, success, failures, coffee, and Netflix. Real conversations with real women. Let's go. Sometimes we're just not okay. There are things that are going on in our lives. And you know what? It's Monday and you have to go to work and the kids have to go to school or you have to finish a paper. And how do we deal with that? This is the one about loss and poop. Courtney, say hello.
Hello.
Who are you? What are you doing here today?
I'm Courtney Reichley.
Yeah.
I am a spiritual growth site director in Richmond, Kentucky, which is south of Lexington. I have four children. Been married for 19 years to my husband, who is the campus pastor. That's interesting.
Fancy that.
Yeah. From Pittsburgh. I've lived all over the Deep South, Alabama, South Carolina, Florida. Yeah.
So I understand that you and David recently went through a year. Is that about the right time frame? Like a year where there was a lot of loss.
Yeah. 18 months. We're hitting about the 18-month mark.
18 months. And would you say you're out of that as we sit here today or?
There hasn't been any
new loss.
New loss. But to say we're out of that, I think we're realizing I don't know if we'll ever be out of that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, can you rewind us to the beginning of that period of time and maybe just take us through a little bit of here's sort of what happened to us during this year where you started feeling loss after loss.
Right. So we had moved to Lexington from South Carolina, just restarting. David had just turned 40, so I was about 37 years old, and life hit reset. We left all of our friends. We were in a really neat community where we worked and lived with all of our close friends from college. We would move together. We would support each other. And so we left that, moved to Lexington to become part of Crossroads Christian Church. It takes me a long time to make friends. So it was a good place, but I wouldn't say I had strong community here. And about a year into that, in the midst of just life change in the middle of your life, my 16-year-old nephew was on a mission trip to Panama, came home, didn't feel well. My sister took him to the doctor. They thought he may have a parasite. They thought he may have contracted some, you know, eaten something. He was just throwing up. And they said, we're just going to have to let it run its course. Long story short, 2 days later, he woke up, told my sister he wanted to go to the hospital, didn't feel well. She went to grab him a shirt out of his room and came back, and he was unconscious on the floor. He was unresponsive because of the weather. They couldn't life flight him to Children's. My family lives about 30 minutes outside of downtown. So we had to go to a local hospital, and they kind of hit where they were like, we don't know what's going on. We don't know what to do. We're kind of afraid to do anything right now. So took him in, and within 24 hours, he passed away from a brain bleed. Totally healthy, 16-year-old. Like I said, had been to the doctor earlier that week. Total loss. Get through the holidays. It was just one of those put your head down and make it through kind of situations. My dad is an accountant, a CPA, and so usually in January he tries to make a visit. It's kind of like one last visit before he goes into tax season. So he called me and just said, hey, your mom and I want to come down last minute for a weekend visit. He was fine. Came to church. I had just come on or just accepted the position. David's now a campus pastor, and my dad was so excited for him. And they went home, and the next night my mom called and said he had a massive heart attack and was dead. It was 6 months to the day since Connor died. And in that process, my family just, I mean, when you compound brokenness, what do you get? And it's just devastation upon devastation. Next Tuesday will be a year since my dad died. What do you do? What do you do with that, you know?
So all through this year, Monday comes every week.
Every week.
What is going through your head? Not in the acute time right around those losses, but on the weeks following, the months following, as Monday is coming again. Yeah. What? Just take us through some of the thoughts that are in your head. Because you're not okay.
No.
Not okay.
Definitely not. It's surreal. I have lived away from my family for so long, since I graduated high school and went to college. So all of our communication has been phone, text, email. It wasn't the daily face-to-face. So for me, I forgot that he was gone a lot. And so I would call him. I'd send him an email asking him questions, and my brother, who worked with him, would reply and just say, Courtney. My daughter, Millie, texted him every morning and every day after school. And she would text him and say, why isn't he getting back to me? And I'm like, I don't know. Let me check. I mean, it was just because my life continued on, I would forget a lot. It was the re-realization of loss, of grief. And then it became, I have to remind myself, you can't call your dad. And that's been probably the hardest thing for me is I'm the youngest. I'm definitely a daddy's girl. And even things like, I don't know what to do about my paycheck. I don't know how to fill out my payroll information. And I would send that to my dad and say, tell me what, what to check and sign. And yeah, just that support is gone.
And then on top of that, I mean, just when you say it's still Monday, you've got four children. You just started a new job. Your husband just started a new job. Is there any space in this time to find any solace? Like, is there a day where you wake up and it's okay, even for like a minute?
You have to allow yourself to do that, I think. I think the guilt of not feeling pain was really, really hard. Especially when I've got my sister who lost her son and then lost her dad, and then my mom who lost her grandson and then her husband, trying to support them again from afar, and the reality of I just started a new job. I can't just pick up and go. My husband started a new job, so he can't take the load at home. So trying to also be a strong voice of support in the midst of trying to grieve, in the midst of life must go on. It's very difficult, and you have to create that. I think that was the thing of giving myself permission to feel that, and then also creating the space that allowed me to feel that. Because I can't feel it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon when my kids are getting home from school.
That's right. I mean, they need a snack.
Yeah, they need a snack.
Some peanut butter and apples.
Right.
So when you would create that space, what happened? What's in your mind and heart inside of that space?
What we're talking about, if I can say this and it not to be too churchy, is lamenting, right? And for me, defining that means giving something its due respect. And so depending on what it is that I'm lamenting, it depends on, that determines how much space I allow myself. So if it's a moment, if it's, man, I hate the fact that I can't call my dad right now, that's usually a few moments. I just need a minute by myself. Kind of let the emotion come and go. It's an ebb and flow. When it's the realization of the brokenness, I mean, the core soul, not just loss, but just the domino effect of brokenness that tragedy brings, that's usually a day. So that usually takes some preparation where I tell my husband, hey, I feel it inside of me. Like, I've got to have a space to let these emotions go. And so I need Saturday. I at least need a couple hours. The other thing I've really learned is it's okay to let your kids see you upset. There has been so much value in letting my kids console me, letting them tap into the fact that they can have empathy, that they can sit. Also, it gives them freedom to be upset because they're feeling emotions they've never experienced before. And that's really scary. And they don't know what to do with. If they see me cry and say, what's wrong? And I'm like, I'm just really sad right now. All of a sudden, that gives them permission to be sad.
And your kids were old enough that probably that door is open a little bit wider.
Right.
When your kids are a little bit older, just in terms of what you can actually just get in there with them.
Sure.
And just sit there together. And
And now our daughter, Millie, she is on the autism spectrum, so it's very different with her. She definitely, when she sees someone upset, automatically thinks it's her fault and takes on all of their emotions. So we've got to be a little more careful with her.
So during this time, does the loss go on? You talked about two losses of life. Was there more?
There was definitely more. Again, the small thing, or they seem insignificant and small in this grand scale of losing a person, but my mom had to sell the house, that the only house they ever owned and lived in for 40 years. My dad's business that he built from the ground up, we had to figure out what to do with that. Finances, you know, my mom is from a generation where women, for the most part, didn't work. And she's in her 60s and is now saying, what does this mean? You know, she's a very healthy 67-year-old. She has a lot of life left in her. What does this mean? Every single time we go up to visit, it's all starting over. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We went skiing for Christmas, and the only thing my sister and I kept saying is, my dad and Connor would have loved this, like all of us together. It's the first time my mm-hmm. kids have been skiing. And so every new thing, and there will be new things for the rest of our lives, when kids get married, when people graduate. My oldest is now this year surpassing where Connor was when he died. Mm-hmm. And so now it's weird for him. But I never let myself not revisit whenever I feel emotion coming on.
So talk about that for a minute. Just talk about, what are the places that you just found yourself mm-hmm. in with God, good and bad?
You know, there is a day-to-day process of, it's weird when emotions come and the things that trigger. I mean, it's just bizarre. Mm-hmm. It's bizarre. But I mean, I have faith in the Lord, which is shocking to me. I mean, considering some of the dark places I went to, of this completely goes against your character, mm-hmm. that you know, the fairness thing, you go through the stages of grief. My findings have been that God only deals with us in reality. So avoiding reality means you're avoiding God. I found that God not only functions in that way, he wants to function in that way. I've realized that God grieves with us. I think that has been one of the most comforting things in the midst of any tragedy, is that sense that God is grieving with us. There's a scripture that talks about, or a story that talks about, when Jesus sighs, someone comes to him for healing and he just says, Jesus sighed. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading something once that said, there's so much caught up in that. And just the idea that Jesus himself looking at that and saying, this is not how it's supposed to be.
I mean, I agree. It's not supposed to be that way. But if it's not supposed to be that way, then how are we supposed to deal with God when things are going all kinds of crazy in our lives?
Yeah, it sometimes doesn't compute that God is mourning with us. I want God to fix things. I want God to be God. And sometimes I feel like he doesn't. He won't.
Yeah.
He seems to be standing out.
Seems far away.
Yes, he's out in the distance somewhere. Mm-hmm. But I know that the moments that I've been able to get real with God have been the moments of breakthrough in my relationship with him, because I think somewhere deep down, I'm sort of afraid I might offend him mm-hmm. or break some set of rules about how I'm supposed to talk to him.
Yep.
And the moments where I just drop all that, sometimes just out of desperation, are the moments where I actually learn something new and I see him for who he is instead of who I think he should be.
It seems like it's always a surprise, because I feel like I've had those experiences too. And the way that he then relates to me is unbelievable. Like, I didn't even expect it. And yet, what else would I expect from the creator of the universe?
Like, he loves to the extent that he will be our punching bag until we're done. And then he goes, okay, are we done?
Yep.
Now, can we just, yes. Now that you've done that, can you just allow me to be God? Allow me to show grace? Allow me to heal this? Mm-hmm. But I don't want that. I want him to just
fix it.
Never have done it in the first place. I don't want any of that.
If
I just
only.
Want, yes.
Yes.
And sometimes that violates my idea of who God is, because I think, why did you let this to begin with? And so I'm mad at him. And I think sometimes I'm scared to tell him I'm mad at him. Does that sound silly?
no, it sounds very, very normal. I bet that there are people out there who want to have a real, honest conversation with God, and they're afraid to.
Yeah. Bottom line for me is the moments where I've been brave enough to just yell at him or cry at him or or say cuss words at him or whatever. I mean, that sounds like heresy, but the moments when I've been able to do that are the moments when I meet the God that is instead of the God of my imaginings.
Yes.
When we cannot see, feel, hear God, Courtney, what do you guys think? How can we help each other? I mean, we're in this thing together. And I know sometimes people say and do the worst, silliest, dumbest things because we just don't know what to do. What did you uncover on your own journey of loss? What do you think it is that we need to do for each other as people, as women who might be in community together?
Even beyond my husband, I have those couple girlfriends that if we're in conversation and a bathroom break is necessary, the conversation doesn't stop, right? Or
everybody moves to the
bathroom. Getting, you know, we're on vacation, we do a girls trip, somebody's doing their hair, well, I gotta go to the bathroom, sorry. We're just gonna keep on going. You're in the shower, I'm gonna go to the bathroom. And I think for emotional and even spiritual health, I think that's the same thing, the same concept. Who are those people in your life? And please don't let it just be your spouse, if that's the case, because that's not healthy, that you can go to the emotional bathroom with the door open. Mm-hmm. That was a huge thing for me, is I had two or three people that I could let down my guard, say the things that I was thinking, that I was feeling, even about God, and they weren't questioning my character. They weren't questioning, are you a real Christian? And that also helped me to discern, okay, I don't need to be like that in front of everybody. I don't leave the door open with everybody, you know? But there are people that it's just that kind of relationship that I know that they're not going to think less of me or think I'm imperfect. I think sometimes, as women especially, we feel like we have to keep the emotional veil up. That I don't do that. I think we rob ourselves of so much with that. You know, you asked how is it possible with kids to lament grief on that level? I have to have other people help me. I have to be able to text someone and say, I can't pick up my kids today. I can't get my kids a snack. Even with my husband, to be able to say, I'm not cooking. Don't ask me what's for dinner. Don't look at me. In fact, you need to sleep on the couch tonight because I just need space. For other people, especially when they're saying, I don't know what to do for you, they are just like, yes, 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 what can I do? The other thing is, these are the people who can say, hey, Courtney, you've been down there a little too long. This isn't healthy. And for me, that was a big thing, is am I finding God in the midst of this lamenting, or is this justification for all the negativity that comes out of this? This explains why I can be such a jerk. This explains why I can be so short-tempered. Like, if you knew my story, well, you don't know me, so you can't, you know.
So I was reading about Jewish mourning after a death. There are rituals and prescriptions of how, if you practice the Jewish faith, you mourn. Like you do. You just read books about Jewish mourning rituals. But there was an interesting one, and I'd love your take on how you've done this, because God ultimately wants to bring us back to life.
Right.
You know, that's what he does. He's in the business of bringing dead things back to life.
Right.
And I was fascinated by this ritual that is practiced at the 30-day mark. There's an important period of mourning around a death, 30 days. And in this particular book, this Jewish woman described the ritual of walking around the block as a signal that I must return in some ways to the world. Now, there's another period of mourning that goes on past that for an entire year. So it doesn't, it's not like now I can just move on. It wasn't that. It was a signal that I will now attempt to rejoin the world. So I was really fascinated by just the prescription of that and God's expectation that we will come back to life. And that we're to, even before we totally feel it, we're to assume, because he's involved, I'm going to come back to life. So tell us, what were important moments for you where you have had that glimmer of hope and you've realized, I'm going to come back to life too. There is something more for from this.
I love that. I think that the phrase that has gotten me and literally gets me through is the fact that if it's not good, God is not finished.
That reminds me of John 11, actually. I'm going to read it because it just, this whole time I've been sitting here thinking about it. From John 11, starting in verse 38, this is a story about when Jesus brings someone back from the dead. And so it says, Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor. He has been in there for 4 days. Then Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me, but I say this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. It's incredible to me when I listen to that story, because I just think, I mean, this is the message of Jesus. Mm-hmm. This is the message of our God through his son, who he put on this earth to redeem us through his own death and to buy us back to life. That's an incredible message. We're just 3-4 days from Easter. Mm-hmm. And when I think about life coming from death, I think there is no life if he didn't die.
That's right.
And we don't like that principle in our own life.
Yeah.
We just don't want that because there's the pain and the suffering, and we don't understand it and we are hurt by it. And I just know that we serve a God who is a God that brings life from death. Mm-hmm. We can bet on that one.
Yep.
We always want the God of redemption. We want healed, right? That's what I wanted for my dad and my nephew. I want healing. Mm-hmm. I want the redemption God. I want him to make things right. Mm-hmm. And the thing about God is he's not just about redemption. He's about resurrection as well. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is we will get to the good one of those ways. And that's the thing is sometimes when tragedy comes, we want God to make it right. And we don't trust that maybe he's saying, if you will just let this one die, if you could trust what I have, right? Lazarus, the dead man came out and he said, take off those grave clothes and let him go. Like, this is a new man.
Mm-hmm. What do you say if people listen to your story and find themselves mourning a loss of any sort, a loss of life, a loss of job, a loss of opportunity that they thought would be there, whatever the case might be, what would you tell them to do today?
I would say to not be ashamed of the emotion that comes with it, to embrace that emotion. That is a God-given emotion, anger, frustration, sadness. Those are emotions that God has hardwired in us as humans. I would say invite God into that. Allow God to come into your reality. He wants to be in your reality. That's the only place he can encounter you is in your reality. So don't be afraid to do that. And I would say to allow community to come alongside you. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be perfect. People are going to mess up and say and do the wrong thing all the time. But community is the only way that this is going to work, because you can't do it by yourself, especially if you've got a job and kids. So I think that the whole thing of community makes this work. And just coming back to that idea of giving something its due respect, sometimes we think the best thing to do is to move on really quickly, to get away from the tragedy. And then we wonder why we keep getting blindsided. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, but did you give it a moment and just say, that's worth me going on the steps and having a good cry for a minute. That's worth that. So I think don't run from the emotion and realizing that God wants to encounter you in your reality. And that's okay.
IKR is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. Reach out to us using the hashtag IKR or email us at ikr@crossroads.net. Very special thanks for our music to Mae Klingler. Find her at mayklingler.com and more of her music on Spotify and iTunes. You will not be sorry you did.